Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When it opens this fall, Lordson Skate Park in Des Moines will be the largest skate park in the United States with 88,000 square feet of skatable surface. This hour, we'll find out how this park came to be and explore skateboarding culture around the rest of the state of Iowa. If you are a skater, part of skating culture, have thoughts you want to share, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. And my first guest today is Nate Sherwood. He used to be a professional skater. He lived in San Diego, and now he owns a skate shop called Eduskate in Cedar Rapids, and he is here with me today. Hello, Nate.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, I'm honored to be here. This is great. Super excited.
Let's go back way back in time to when you were a kid growing up in Portland, Oregon. When did you get into skating?
I got into skateboarding in 1987. It was actually my seventh birthday, and you know, I won't bore you all day with all the details, but I was, you know, a typical kid of the 1980s. You know, skateboarding was booming at that time. It was everywhere, every direction. You saw in every Fruit Roll-Ups commercial. You know, you saw in Back to the Future with Marty McFly, et cetera. So I was bitten by the bug 30 years ago and haven't got off the board since.
So when you first got into skating culture in the 80s, it was a little bit of a counterculture.
True. It was. Absolutely. It was definitely, you know, the analogy I always use, it was kind of like the blues, and it was still in the Delta. You know what I mean? It was still something that was kind of had its little niche going on. It was a counterculture. We had our own language, our own taste and everything, our own kind of views on things. You know, just like when you think of Lead Belly or Robert Johnson playing, you know, slide guitar. And then, of course, you know, it became more mainstream. And to use an analogy now, it's kind of more in that phase where, you know, the Rolling Stones have taken over and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's neat to see it grow and to see, you know, the past three decades of evolution of it has been incredible.
So okay, you started when you were seven. You probably weren't hanging out with other skaters at that point, at least not too much.
Not many.
But as you got to be a teenager and got really involved in skating culture, tell me what role that filled in your life.
You know, honestly, I think skateboarding saved my life. I know that sounds very cliche to say, but, you know, I have learning disability as a group with dyslexia and Tourette syndrome. And, you know, it helped me focus. It helped me teach me work ethic. It taught me how to be social with people, taught me how to, you know, think outside the box, how to troubleshoot. There's so many facets that skateboarding taught me at an early age that honestly helped me become the adult that I am today, that there's no way I could possibly even fit it into one radio show.
One of the memories that I have of skateboarders when I was growing up is often watching them get chased off of a stairway with a railing, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You were finding all kinds of places to skate. Was that part of your experience, that you were getting chased away from places a lot?
It still happens all the time, to be honest. You know, here it's really funny when you're 40 years old and like the security guard is half your age and they roll up and they like kind of look at you like, this is like my dad's age. What do I do? Like, he's on private property skateboarding. Like, it's pretty comical. I mean, I'm very respectful. I always try to go places when they're closed. I try to leave nothing but footprints. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, it's a great, it's funny you said that. It's still very true today, even though it's going to be in the Olympics next year and that skateboarding is becoming so mainstream and so well accepted. There's still a lot of facets and areas where you're still not allowed to skateboard. I mean, there's still bike trails in the U.S. would say no skateboards on them and things of that nature, which is very comical to me.
Did anybody try to get you to give it up when you were a kid?
Oh, absolutely. Plenty of times. Absolutely. I mean, you know, my parents were always really supportive, you know, and I thank them both for that. But there was definitely plenty of guidance counselors and people in school and academia. And, you know, even, you know, when I got jobs and things like that, like, you need to give that up. I got a sprained wrist, you know, things of that nature. You know, I guess everyone's got their vice, you know, skateboard was mine. And, you know, but yeah, it's comically speaking. I mean, you know, and you'll deal with that no matter what your hobby or obsession is. I mean, whether you're a musician or you're an artist or whatever, if you get obsessed with it, at a certain point, people around you are going to tell you to put it, you know, put down the easel or put down the violin or whatever. So
it's funny that you compare it to art, because I mean, for a lot of people, I guess we think of it as a sport.
Right, right.
But you kind of think of it as performance art.
I do. I think of it a lot in the same world as, you know, ballet or modern dance, you know, anything in that nature. It's very similar to that. You know, it's skateboarding is always you're always respected for coming up with the originality in it, whether it's your style, your tricks, just like music. And yes, there's athleticism involved in it, but it's not like you get a certain amount of points for a certain amount of trick, or you get a certain amount of this, and there's this many rules per side of a court, you know. There's been more structure to it in the past decade, and of course there's skateboarders from both sides of the fence will argue that. But, I think of it more as a performance art, absolutely, than I do of sport.
Now, I'm sure that those guidance counselors also said things like, you're never going to make a living as a skateboarder.
Oh, yeah.
But then you went and did that. How did that happen?
Yeah. No, it was interesting. I mean, it was comical. I was really fortunate. I was sponsored by a skateboard shop in Portland, Oregon, Cal Skate and Sport. And Howard Weiner and all these guys that were working at that shop got me involved with this local contest series, OASA, Oregon Amateur Skateboarding Association. And just like anything, you kind of, you start making connections and building rank and things like that. And after doing that contest series for a while, I went to the NSA, National Skateboarding Association. And, next thing I know, I built sponsors and got my name out, started getting known. And, by the time I was 19, I was professional and making a living at it. It was really strange how it just, I worked odd-end jobs up until that point, construction and Jiffy Lube and a video production studio and things of that nature. But, then it was kind of amazing overnight. All of a sudden I was like, wow, I'm living my dream. Literally, this is strange. It was stranger than fiction, to be honest.
How long were you able to support yourself as a professional skater?
7 years. And then I went through a hiatus for 4 years where I worked as a team manager of this clothing company, Factory 54. And then a shoe company by the name of Airspeed wanted to bring me back in. So it was kind of like I retired. Then I got, to quote Al Pacino, every time I tried to get out, they pulled me back in. And so I got pulled back in, and then I was in that until 2011. Then I stepped down in 2011, and then I basically had a year of working odd-end jobs in San Diego until I got basically my business plan right for Edge Skate, and that's pretty much the end of my story right there.
What brought you to Iowa?
Yeah, that's great. So my wife, Lindsay, is originally from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I flew out here a lot to visit my in-laws and to see the area and whatnot, plenty of times before I moved here. And I just fell in love with the area, to be honest. The people were great. I loved the atmosphere. I loved the cost of living. It was half of what I was paying. Amazing talent, amazing local skateboarders, guys like Adam Miller, Eric Fletcher. I could go on for hours. I met all these amazing, talented skateboarders, and there was no shop to represent them. There wasn't a shop within 30-mile radius of where I, of Cedar Rapids. And so when I got back to San Diego and I was kind of sick of working my daily grind, I was working at a car dealership at that point. I said, okay, I need to take a loan out. I need to open a shop. And next thing I know, I was in the U-Haul with the wife. And that's what we did. We moved here. And here I am 7 years later, still in business. I don't know how that happened, but, I feel like the field of dreams, it was one of those things where everyone laughed at me. Like, you're going to open a skate shop in Iowa? Are you crazy? And I was just like, you build it, they'll come. You know what I mean? Just to quote the movie,
Well, and you have really dug into skating culture in Iowa as well, and really the history of skating culture in the Cedar Rapids area.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about that. We were talking about 1987 when you first started skating,
right.
And a lot of us remember when skating just really exploded. But it was kind of the late 70s, early 80s when things took off. What was going on in Cedar Rapids?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, a lot of people think of Cedar Rapids just, this place is surrounded by industrial factories and, and corn, soybean, but in the 1970s, there was this group, the Hogtown Boys there, Steve Day, Ron Day, I could go on for hours, and these guys were, going to the public pools and skating, get kicked out, they were building their own ramps, they were building mini ramps, they were taking sheet metal from their dad's metal fabrication businesses and, erecting all kinds of obstacles, which I could geek out about for hours. And then by the early 80s, there was this group, Team Goad, which was this guy, Steve and Chris, they were twins, and this guy, Jim Dosh, and I could go on about them, and they actually got an indoor skate park eventually built by the name of Lynn Skates in the late 80s, and then they kind of, were dominant through, the 80s and early 90s, and then this other group came out, Mob Mafia and Slew Crew, and I could go on for hours, but every generation in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, always kind of brings their own little unique thing to the table, which is pretty impressive. And it's got a unique sound to it. To use an analogy for the listeners out there that don't skateboard or have any interest in it, it's like, you listen to Arnett Coleman, right, and you listen to John Coltrane, there's a very distinct sound between, your St. Louis jazz and your New York jazz. They kind of bring their own things to the table, and everyone's kind of got their own flavor. And it's neat to study that history and to meet all these people and interview them in the shop and just kind of hear their stories and how they fell in love with skateboarding, even though they were surrounded by nothing but corn and soybeans,
Well, and let's talk about what life is like in the shop, because, you've got these sort of old timers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
People who've been involved in skating for decades.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the young folks coming in, too. So tell me a little bit about your clientele and who you're meeting.
Yeah, it's amazing, to be honest. I mean, when I first opened up, I did not imagine that I'd have the broad reach that I do. I mean, for instance, I cater from everybody from age 6 to 60. I had a gentleman in his late 50s that worked at the nuclear power plant and in Palo, and he came and said, I never stood on a skateboard in my life. I really want to try skateboarding. I just want to try it. It just looks neat, you know? You know, I took him out in the parking lot, showed him a couple of things, had him try a couple of demo boards. Next thing I know, he bought a board. He fell in love with it. Kept coming back. And, of course, I got the average, you know, 10-year-old, 16-year-old, you know, college kid, 20-year-old needs a board to get on campus. But it's really fun. It's just like a bicycle or a car or anything. It's nice to see. It's just another mode of transportation, you know?
You're full of these words,
oh,
aren't you?
Oh, yeah, thank you. I appreciate skate. You noticing. Yes.
So I think we have kind of a stereotype of the skater, the white teenage boy,
I think, of course.
That stereotype.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see that broadening?
Absolutely. I mean, we have skateboarders from, I mean, everybody from the, you know, African-Americans, Hispanics, obviously whites, LBG community, everything. And I could go on. I mean, the first African-American skateboarder that was professional was Peanut Brown in the early 80s. And then Steve Stedham came out in the mid 80s. And Alfonso Ross was probably the most pivotal one in the late 80s. You know, Steve Caballero, you know, Eddie Elgato Elguero in the 70s. I could go on about the Latino community of skateboarding. But you're right. I mean, that is the stereotype, unfortunately. But now it's a big melting pot. And I love it because it just shows that unification of everybody. It shows that, you know, even though the world does like try to trivialize everything and make it look like there's these barriers. I've never seen, you know, other than, you know, skateboarding is a place of camaraderie, and other than maybe professional sports like basketball and football, you don't see that in many other places, unfortunately, but it's neat. Skateboarding, music, etc. You just see that. It doesn't matter what gender you are. It doesn't matter what race you are. We all just bring whatever we have to the table, and we're all just gambling with gravity together, you know?
Do you see as many girls coming in
tons.
As boys?
Actually, when I first opened up, I had a couple female customers right off the bat. Sheridan Seeley was my first female customer back in 2012, but now it's huge. I get tons of female skateboarders. There's days where we don't have anything but female customers. Literally, I don't even see one guy walk through the door. And like, it'll just be like, we'll be just slammed for 8 hours straight. And so, it's pretty cool.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we are exploring skateboarding culture in Iowa. With me, Nate Sherwood. He used to be a professional skater. He lived in San Diego and other various places on the West Coast. He now owns a skate shop called EduSkate in Cedar Rapids. We're also going to talk about the new skate park opening soon in Des Moines. It will be the largest skate park in the United States. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up this fall, Lordson Skate Park is going to open up in Des Moines, and it will be the largest skate park in the United States. 88,000 square feet of skatable surface. And we're going to talk about that park in particular in a few minutes. Right now, we're kind of digging into skating culture in Iowa, and we want to hear from you. Is this an important part of your experience? Why is it important in your life? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now, Nate Sherwood. He used to be a professional skater. Now he owns a skate shop. It's called EduSkate in Cedar Rapids. And Nate, we're going to get to the phones here in just a second, but I want to ask you about skating culture today. I mean, kids come into the store, they're excited about getting that skateboard, but skating culture has changed. It's not nearly as countercultural. There are safe places to skate. There are skate parks. It's sort of sanctioned now. And as you mentioned, it's going to be an Olympic sport in 2020. How has that changed the vibe in the skating community?
It's neat that you asked that, actually. I'm happy you asked. You know, I look at it the way I use an analogy for people that aren't in skateboarding. You know, you look at people that rode Harley Davidsons in the 1960s, you think of Easy Rider, you think of these outcasts, you think of these people that are camping under bridges, et cetera, you know, Hell's Angels, you know, all that kind of jazz. Now you see people that are doctors or lawyers, you know, insurance salesmen that ride Harleys, right? Skateboarding is the same thing. It's traversed from, like you said, this counterculture, this kind of outsider thing, this kind of esoteric, you know, strange out of left field deal, to being, you know, less viewed as something nefarious and less viewed as something, you know, you know, depressing or, you know, scary or whatever, to being just another thing like volleyball or, you know, cricket or, you know, whatever, you know, lawn bowling, which, you know, is nice. It's nice for me. I'm happy to see that, you know, it's a thrill for someone that's been in it for 3 decades to see it go from being this thing where I always had to worry about kind of guarding my, you know, what I did. Like, even when I skateboard for a living, I'd go to a barber and they'd be like, what do you do for a living? I would hide it. I'd be like, oh, I work in marketing. I work in this. Because I never wanted to say what I did, because it was like one of those things where somebody might just want to stab you because they hate you so much for being a skateboarder, because they knew some of their property was damaged. They knew this, and they always had some story of negativity. So it's really nice for me just to be open. You know, it's like one of those things you can just be yourself, come out of the closet and be like, yep, I'm a skateboarder. Yep, whatever. You know, I wear it on my chest. So. It's really nice to see it so accepted, to be honest.
Does that make it less attractive to some people who really loved that countercultural part of it?
True. And I'm sure we're going to hear that from some callers. Unfortunately, there's a huge upheaval about that, especially right now in the skateboard industry, becoming an Olympic sport and becoming this and street league and all that jazz. I don't think it's going to take away from the creativity of it. What drew me to skateboarding was actually the creative aspect of it, being able to invent tricks, to invent different scales. You know, like Miles Davis was drawn to the trumpet, not drawn to the drug culture or the bebop era of the 1950s jazz. He was drawn to the fact that, you know, you can invent a lot of things with that. And that's the way I look at most creative skateboarders. We look at it as bebop jazz or you know, as heavy metal or whatever. It's not something that, you know, you look at because of the, you know, the trashing or, you know, no one is drawn to Led Zeppelin because they trashed hotel rooms. They're drawn because they enjoyed the music they made. So there is those people, but unfortunately, I think a lot of them will be drummed out or they'll have their mind changed pretty soon.
All right. Eduskate is a pretty big draw in Cedar Rapids for skaters in Eastern Iowa. Subsect Skate Shop in Des Moines draws people all over Central Iowa and probably beyond. And Kevin Jones is the owner of Subsect Skate Shop, and he's with us on the line as well. Hello, Kevin.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And before we dig into talking about this big new skate park in Des Moines, let's talk about skating culture in Des Moines. And first, tell us your story. When did you get into it?
My story is pretty much the same as Nate. You know, it was the same age, about probably been skating about the same amount of years, just found a board. It started out as a mode to get from one friend's house to the next, and then you learn a trick and it just goes from there. You want to keep learning more, and so be it.
What led you to opening up your own skate shop?
Well, actually, my friends originally opened it, and then like I just hung out there, helped out, skated for them, and then slowly became a worker to eventually buying it out as they kind of moved on.
So we were just talking, Nate and I talking about how the culture has shifted somewhat. Tell me what you see in Central Iowa now. Who's skating?
I mean, everyone is skating. The demographic has changed so much over the last couple years, and especially this last year, we've seen an increase of girls skating from just getting into it, 10-year-old girls to, you know, even 20-somethings, just, you know, whether it's even changing up their exercise routine and wanting to just push, you know, on the trails or something like that. But guys are getting back into it that used to skate, and it's all over the place.
You know, when we look at skate parks often, and you drive by the skate park or go and hang out, you see sort of a clutch of often older guys in their 40s, and then you see the kids there. What's the dynamic like at the skate park? Kevin, you can go first, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts, Nate.
You know, it's kind of awesome. When you're there, it's skateboarding is what bonds us all together. It's not no age. I kind of forget how old I am when I'm around the younger kids. So sometimes I even have to remind myself, like, oh, I could be your dad, you know, type of scenario. But it all gets left to that gets left. You know, it's about, you know, if we're an older guy's watching a kid battle a trick, we'll throw some tips, and we kind of sit back and enjoy. We remember that same battle. You know, and the old guys learning new stuff from the young kids. It's just one big group, you know, and we don't think about class or any of that other stuff. It's just all about the skateboarding.
Yeah, that looks, you're nodding your head, Nate. That sounds like that resonates a lot with you.
Absolutely. I definitely have a kinship with Kevin for sure. I deal with the exact same scenario all the time. You know, you're sitting there skating a spot and some kid's struggling with the trick and you're giving some pointers on, you know, how to position themselves or, you know, muscle memory, et cetera. And they look at you like you're crazy, you're not going to work. And then all of a sudden they pull it and they look at you, their mouths are like, how'd you know? Or you're like, oh, I've been through a thing or two, man. And, you know, I wasn't born yesterday, buddy. You know, so yeah, I can relate
so
to
you're
Kev
like
all the time.
You're like the elders of the skate park scene.
Yeah, we're like Yoda. Me and Kevin are like Yoda. We're just like old guys that are like stiff, but somehow we still magically like get out of indoor once in a while. while. I don't know. It's just, you know, that's the only analogy I can think of off the top of my head. I know it's a horrible one, but it's all I got to work with.
You know? I think it's a pretty good one. All right. We'd love to hear from you if you're part of skating culture. You have some thoughts on this. Sandy is on the line at 866-780-9100 in Davenport. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Tell me your story.
So I started skating growing up in the 80s in Texas. So I'm guessing I'm about the same age as these guys. I'm about 45 now. And just kind of been doing it my whole life. And it's just something that's been like an important like hobby. It's like kept me young. I was talking to Andy McDonald actually just this summer when I met him out at a Woodward camp. And he was saying to me that it was like the fountain of youth. And I totally agree with that. Like, you know, it just keeps me in touch with like younger people and keeps me fit and active. And like, it's just, you know, it's just a ton of fun that it's hard to replicate really with any other hobby, I think.
How do you see the culture shifting today?
Well, when I was a kid, skateboarding was definitely more of a kind of renegade sport, right? Like, it was a lot of punk rockers like myself who did it, and we were sort of social outsiders to a certain extent. And I think now it's way more socially acceptable. Like, when I was a kid, we didn't really have skate parks. I mean, in Dallas, we had a vert ramp that someone built by Bachman Lake, and that was the skate park. Right, there was no municipal like investment in skateboarding, so that totally changed. But what kids don't understand now is they're living literally in the golden age of skateboarding, with the amount of parks and things available to them. They just have no idea how lucky they have it.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. I gotta ask Nate. I mean, in your 40s. Or maybe a little younger.
I'm in my 40s. Don't worry about it. You don't scare me. I'm in my 40s. It's cool. You're not hurting my feelings.
So it's got to hurt more to
it
be
does.
A skater. I mean, is there
it
a
does.
Point at which you're like, oh, maybe yeah. I do put the board away?
Yeah. It's a gamble with gravity. You know, just yesterday I was at an event. I have a torn labrum in my hip right now, so I'm dealing with a little injury, but I'm still pushing through it. But it's, you know, you do a lot more stretching when you're older. You know, I do yoga. I do a lot of calisthenics. I eat right. I don't try to eat inflammatory foods. I don't eat fried food. I mean, you know, I could go on this long-winded thing, of course, which I won't bore you with all day. But, you know, you learn to take care of yourself. You learn to pace yourself, too. You know, me and Kev aren't skating as hard as we were when we were in our teens or our 20s by any stretch of the imagination, you know. But it is a gamble with gravity still, and you still take a hit here and there. But you just got to – you kind of learn how to roll the punches. And it's just, you know, one of those situations where you just kind of got to just glide through it. And, you know, you can't let the grounds of time destroy you. You know, it's hard. It definitely is harder in your 40s. But, you know, just like any athlete in their 40s, I mean, you know, you know, Jackie Chan isn't doing what he was doing in his 20s either, you know?
Well, Kevin, of course, I mean, times are tough for a lot of, you know, businesses, small businesses everywhere with our internet culture, things you can just, you know, order anything you want online.
Yeah.
But a skate shop, it seems like a really special culture. What keeps people coming into the store when they can get whatever they want from anywhere?
I mean, skate, it's a home, you know, so it's the place where skaters meet up. Skate shops like me and Nate's we're always giving back to the community, hosting events and all that stuff. And we're in, you know, they can see us at the park. I mean, we're just a part of the culture. So I think skateboarders have a natural, they want to support, you know, their own people, you know, and they're also very particular. So they like to see the board in person before, stand on it, you know, before they just buy it online or all that stuff. But I think really it's the social aspect. You know, they like hanging out in a skate shop. I mean, during the summers, I always say it's my babysitting hours. You know, all the kids are hanging out in the shop, and I catch myself, you know, don't do this, don't do this, you know, and all that. But I think it's just that, the scene that gets created inside the skate shop.
Yeah. And we're lucky that all skateboarders are OCD. If they weren't so meticulous, we'd be out of business years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, skateboarders literally, you guys, everyone out there doesn't skate is going to laugh at this, but literally like a fraction of a millimeter will change things. Like, there are people that will not skate a 53-millimeter wheel, but they will skate a 52-millimeter wheel and vice versa. There's people out there that will skate an 8-point, you know, 125 wide deck and not an 8.12. And so, I mean, we have to deal with like really small, like tolerances that are like NASA level tolerance differences. And
NASA level. That's great.
Literally, like, I mean, I sometimes feel like I'm, you know, in an Apollo program or something. Like, my bearing sounds weird. It's rolling fine, though, right? No, it sounds weird. So you pull apart a whole skateboard, pull out a bearing, and you blow some air through it, and a little bit of acetone, a little bit of speed cream. Next thing you know, the guy's happy. So, I mean, there's things, that's the only thing that keeps us in business. Like, honestly, we've been doomed. Me and Kevin have been doomed years ago if it wasn't for the OCD of skateboarders. Thank you, skateboarders, for being so OCD.
Yeah,
thank you for being
that.
Mentally sick. If you weren't mentally sick, we would all be ruined, you know?
All right, let's get back to the phones. Morgan is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Morgan.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
First, I want to say, remember, there's more than skateboarders at skate parks.
All right, so
there's rollerbladers and scooters and all kinds of things that utilize these great places.
All right, and what else would you like to talk about?
If lots of people who are skeptical about the X Games kind of sports, or teachers or parents who aren't sure what goes on in the brain of these great athletes, there's a fantastic TED Talk by Dr. Tay. I think he has a PhD in physics from MIT or something, and his TED Talk is, "Can Skateboarders Save Our Schools?"
Huh.
And the gist of his TED Talk is how X Game athletes want to master the trick. And it's all about the flow of getting there. You're in the flow and you crash, land, and you crash, land, and you crash, land. He goes, you know, this isn't fun exactly. He's really humorous. And then when he actually masters the trick, then that's what you're after. And he has a very amusing section where he says, should I be graded on each of these fails? Because if I were in a school, I'd get a B on this one, a C minus on this one.
Right, and
no,
I understand. You
don't
need to get that granular. I got you. I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, yeah, skateboarding, or, you know, like you said, everything, anything at that discipline, it teaches you a good work ethic at an early age. I have friends that have, honestly, unlike me, they, you know, have become electrical engineers. They become doctors. They become attorneys. They become, you know, great members of society, airplane mechanics. You know, I could go on for hours. And at an early age, you know, you learn to fall and get back up and to keep trying. And just as Einstein said, you know, trying the same thing again and expecting different results is the key mode of insanity. So, you know, you try to change your game a little bit. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, I never heard this TED Talk, but I can agree with that gentleman completely, that it teaches you to adapt and overcome, and that slow is smooth and smooth is fast, and that, you know, there's a virtue in patience, and, you know, understand that things aren't going to happen overnight. And it teaches you that, you know, any good stew is going to take hours to cook instead of in a microwave. So, you know, I've adapted it to everything in my life. I'm sure Kev can relate to that too, that skateboarding at an early age taught us to be individuals and taught us how to deal with all kinds of things that society can throw at you. And, I mean, there's been a million times I should have been in a car wreck on the freeway, but I wasn't, just because my quick reflexes from skateboarding, you know. And my wife will look at me like, what just happened? I'm like, don't worry, we're good. And I'm just like calm as can be, but most people will be like, I just had a heart attack. That semi almost killed us. So, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things that you adapt to every part of life. And I agree with him on that. I can see it saving schools in that sense. Of course, obviously, I'm biased, you know, and don't let me irritate you with all that. But, you know, it's just one of those deals where, you know, it does, after school programs. I mean, in California, there's skateboard PE when I was living out there. I mean, there's literally high schools that have skateboard PE classes.
Yeah.
You know, me and my wife just did a whole thing with the Iowa Children's Museum where they bought 40-some boards from us just to have as an after-school special for that. So, I mean, there is more and more of that talk of that using it as a part of coordination in the daily curriculum and stuff, which is pretty cool.
Let's get back to the phones. Candy's on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Candy.
Hi. Well, I'm glad to be on the phone today. I was trying to get my son, Jackson, to get on the phone and talk about his love of skating, but I'll tell you how much I appreciate the community of the skating community. We have traveled around northeastern Iowa, north central Iowa, hitting any place that has a cool place to skate. I recently had the pleasure of buying a birthday present down from Nate in Cedar Rapids, but it's full of, the folks over at Hollywood, you know, the guys, oh, yeah. You walk in there and they, they taught Jackson how to drop in.
Cool.
And that's something I couldn't have taught him how to do.
Right.
His bumps are flying, and he's found a place that is different from his older brother, you know, and his brother has been very successful in running, but he's found his own jam in skating, his own community, and his own friends. And I just want to thank the guys from the Cedar Loose Skate Association in Waterloo, Cedar Falls as well. And come on, Waterloo, let's get that park done.
Yeah, right.
We can have one here locally, but awesome. We're enjoying meeting the folks of Northeast Iowa and the skating community in Iowa.
Well, Candy, thank you so much for your call. And, of course, we're going to talk about the skate park in Des Moines, although there are many skate parks across Iowa. If you want to talk about your skate park in particular, feel free to give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to take a short break here in just a moment. Kevin, what Candy was saying about that welcoming skater community, that sounds like that resonates with what you were talking about in your shop.
Yep, that's what it's all about.
All right.
Moving on. Yeah, Kev.
We'll be back in just a moment. With me right now, Kevin Jones, owner of Subsect Skate Shop in Des Moines. And also with me, Nate Sherwood. He owns Eduskate in Cedar Rapids. And we're going to focus in on this giant new skate park being opened in Des Moines. It will be the largest skate park in the United States. 88,000 square feet of skatable surface. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about skateboarding culture in Iowa. With me, Nate Sherwood. He used to be a professional skater. Now he runs the skate shop Eduskate in Cedar Rapids. Also with me, Kevin Jones, owner of Subsect Skate Shop in Des Moines. And this conversation was inspired by the new skate park that will be opening in Des Moines, Lordson Skate Park. It will be the largest skate park in the United States with 88,000 square feet of skatable surface. And of course, a lot of people came together to make this possible. And in fact, it's been in the works for decades. It's been on the horizon for a lot of people for a very long time. Kevin Jones, of course, was one of the people involved in this process. But I want to bring a couple of other people into the conversation as well. Brad Anderson, he co-chaired the Skate Park Committee. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Charity. Good to be with you.
And Christine Hensley is here, former Des Moines City Council member. Hello, Christine.
Good morning. Thank you, Charity.
Well, thank you all for being here today. And Kevin and Brad, I'm going to let you guys start and sort of tell me the history of these skate park plans and how you got involved. Brad?
Well, the skate park really got started by Amos, which is a group of community organizers here in Central Iowa about a dozen years ago. And they really deserve credit for the vision. They came up with this idea of let's have a gigantic skate park in Des Moines. And so how that came about is they went door to door, they went to church basement, to community centers, and they really just asked people, what do we want? And a lot of the parents said, you know, we need more outdoor activities for our kids, and then specifically skate parks kept coming up over and over again. So about 12 years ago, they came up with this idea. And then really a couple years ago, I was in Kevin's shop because that's where I buy all my shoes. And I said, hey, Kevin, you know, what's the update on the skate park? Because I kept hearing about it. And then Kevin said, you know, it's still underway. We're still trying to get it done. We're having a little trouble raising some money. And then I said, well, you know, what do we need to raise? And he said, well, we've got $500,000 grant. We need to raise $3.5 million. And the match is due on $500,000 here in December. And this was in August. So I said, oh, wow. So we have like some work to do real fast. And then I said, you know, what if we put together a little steering committee to kind of help you guys raise the money and with people that know how to raise money in this community. And when you're putting together a steering committee like that, you need a bunch of heavy hitters. So I called the Community Foundation. They said there are 2 people who you need to call right now. One was Angela Conley, and the other one is with us today, who is Christine Hensley. And I have to say, I haven't had a chance to work with Christine up until this skate park project. And she is one of the best project leaders and fundraisers, I think, in the entire state of Iowa. So it has been an honor to work with her. Yeah. And, you know, after all is said and done, we said, look, we'll give this park, we'll give the fundraising a deadline of about a year. And within that year, we put together this committee and we raised $3.5 million to get it done.
Wow, that's incredible. And now I understand why this is an easy sell within the skateboarding community. But Christine, you come from outside of the skateboarding community, right?
I do. And, you know, when I was first approached about the skate park, well, first of all, the city donated the land. So I was involved in that discussion and action that took place back in 2009. And we donated the 2 acres that it's going to be built on. And that has a value of about $600,000. So I was very aware of the discussions and what Amos had gone through for movement for a skate park. But what I feel is so important, all great cities need to have diversity and different amenities, because not everybody likes to play golf, not everybody likes to swim. So it's really important that we have a lot of diversification that really helps us with the quality of life. And when the city does interviews of our residents, quality of life is always at the top. That is one of the most important reasons people choose to live in the city. So it was really an easy sell for me. Because there was a lot of justification for it, and it was just adding to the overall quality of what we have here in Des Moines.
Was there pushback? Because I can imagine people saying a skate park. I mean, that's just good for skaters. And of course, Morgan pointed out that rollerbladers, scooters, other people can use this park, but it's a pretty specialized space for a pretty specialized use. Did you run into pushback, Christine?
There is no question we've run into some pushback. It's been also about educating a lot of the corporations, although I would say, as we've been out fundraising, that there are a lot of CEOs, when you sit down to have the conversation and talk about the money, they will sit there and they'll say, you know, I skateboard. I actually do skateboard. And it's kind of like they've not really had the opportunity to be public about that. So it's been really fun as we've gone about the community, learning who skateboards and who is so supportive. And, you know, one of the people that's been very involved, and we were talking about modes of transportation that's on our cabinet that's been helping us with fundraising, is Dr. Marty Martin, from the president of Drake University. And he did not hesitate when we asked him to come on board and help us. And he said, you know what, this is another means of transportation for the students. And in fact, we actually are working to put racks on the buildings so that they don't have to take them into the classrooms. They can just put it in a rack just like you would a bike. So it's been a great experience for me.
And I can imagine also, as far as usage of land along the river, obviously Des Moines and every other community in Iowa that has a river has had flooding problems in the last few decades. So that seems like a good use, because it's not going to be destroyed by a flood, right?
Absolutely. You have cement and steel. That's what it will be made out of. So that's very easy to clean up if there's a flood.
I want to go to the phones. Paul Turner is on the line with us now, who has a very long history with the skate park in Des Moines. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Great. And you were the organizer with Amos that first brought the idea to the city?
Yes. So I was working for Amos at the time, and we were doing small group conversations in all of our member congregations. And when we got to Grace United Methodist, the kids there were complaining about the fact that everywhere they skated in the city, they were getting kicked off of the various surfaces because they were skating in places they're not supposed to skate. And so they organized themselves and took the idea of a skate park to the mayor and to the head of Parks and Recreation. And I actually found the Des Moines Register article where it was first talked about, October 30th, 2004, Youth Lobby for Des Moines Skate Park. And Drew Dalmuller was 14 at the time. I think Drew is now 30.
So, I mean, Paul, when you were first pushing for this, I'm sure that it was not in your mind that it would be the biggest skate park in the United States. So, I mean, tell me what's going through your mind now as you see it come to fruition.
I couldn't be happier, and we could not have done it without Brad and Christine and the committee. I mean, they were the ones that really made it happen. We had the original vision. They got it to the finish line. Kevin and I have been lamenting and talking about this, along with Jan Hale and many others, for a long time. So I am just thrilled to see this become reality and the original vision to become reality so soon.
Well, congratulations, Paul. It must be so exciting. And I have to ask, I mean, why is it so big? Where did this idea to make it the biggest skate park in the United States come from? Who wants to tackle that?
Well, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
When Amos originally had the plans working with California Skate Park, and when those plans were unveiled, it was going to be one of the largest. And as we were doing the fundraising and working in the community, we suggested to California Skate Park, we said, you know, we're so close. We are so close. Can't we be the largest? And believe it or not, when they came in with the final designs, they really catapulted us up to the very top of the list, which I think is exciting. And it just underscores when you have people coming together and the public-private partnerships that you can get these types of projects done.
Well, Charity, I'll also add, you know, Des Moines has a history of thinking big with projects like this. And one example I like to use is the bike lanes or the bike trails, excuse me. So, you know, you talked about controversy and whether or not this skate park, because it's kind of a single-use thing, is controversial. Well, I remember the bike trails being controversial way back in the day, mm-hmm. but we invested in them. We, you know, we connected them. We made it a much bigger project than initially people were talking about. And at the end of the day, we received national recognition because of the amazing bike trails we have in central Iowa. And I think people are going to look at this skate park years to come and be like, you know, this is going to be one of the things they talk about when they visit Des Moines and they go back home. I think it's going to attract younger people to the city to address some of our workforce challenges. It is just going to it's the next big thing. And of course, we're all proud to be a part of it.
Well, and I can imagine that there's skater tourism. Nate, maybe you can shed a little light on that. I mean, what do you think how people around the country will respond to
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. I mean, I spend so much money when I travel somewhere. I need, you know, lodging, food, et cetera, and you know, go to the skate park. I mean, I go to Chicago once a year just to go to Grand Plaza to skate, and, you know, I'm spending money in Chicago. You know, I'm staying overnight in a hotel. I'm eating food. Now I can go to Des Moines. By the way, congratulations to everybody over there, by the way, for getting the largest park built. Big time. That's just wonderful. I'm so stoked for you guys. And obviously, I'll be going to Des Moines more often now. So, you know, I know tons of people do that. I mean, we did some renovations to our skate park, some renovations, as I like to say, to our park. And we've already had tons of people coming from out of town, you know, and they're like, yeah, I'm staying in the Doubletree, skating down here. So, I mean, it's amazing what a skate park will draw. Like just like you said, it's a huge thing for tourism. Absolutely. People travel all over the world to go skate parks, just like golfers will for golf courses, or, you know, someone will for theater groups, or et cetera, et cetera. So big kudos.
And of course, I mentioned earlier, of course, there are great skate parks all across the state of Iowa. David Hall wants to make sure that we all know that there's an amazing skate park being constructed and completed in less than 2 weeks in Lamars, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Sioux City Skate Park Association, Artisan Skate Parks, and Pillar Design Group behind that. And of course, Ice Cream Capital of the World and skateboarding put together. what's better than that?
What's better than that?
So Christine, as you know, you're looking ahead. Of course, we've mentioned a couple of times skateboarding is going to be an Olympic sport in Tokyo 2020. So having it be taken so much more seriously on the international level, what is Des Moines thinking about with regard to that and hopes for the future?
Well, I'm going to start out, and then I'm going to ask Brad to jump in here.
Okay.
But we actually, as a part of our fundraising and our cabinet, there was an individual by the name of Norm Sturzenberg that has taken on and put together a nonprofit that is DSM, Skate DSM, and they will be working with the city, I should say, with the Convention and Visitors Bureau to bring in events and do the running of the actual skate park. So we have been contacted by several different groups talking to us already about regional activities. And I'm going to let Brad expand upon that because he's got a little bit more knowledge.
Yeah, so we've already had national competitions reach out to us and say, hey, is your skate park going to be ready this summer? And we have to say, no, I think you're going to have to wait till next summer for competitions to come in. But our goal at SkateDSM, because I'm on the board of SkateDSM as well, is to do a regional tournament, so really host our own regional tournament that attracts folks from not just Iowa, but surrounding states as well. Because Nate is right. I mean, people, if you build it, they will come. People will come from all over the Midwest, I think, to use this park. And so, and the other thing is SkateDSM is going to manage, we're talking about managing some of the national competitions that we expect to inevitably come in, as long as potentially Olympic trials. So when you have the largest skate park in the country, without a doubt, you know, you're going to get a lot of attention and a lot of interest from some of these national competitions. So we anticipate that. But also, I want Kevin to also weigh in, because one of the things SkateDSM is going to do are clinics. And clinics really give skaters the opportunity to teach younger kids how to skate and maybe make a little money doing it. And our goal is to put a little structure behind that, but also really get more and more kids involved in the sport. Because I can tell you, my kids went to the skate park in Urbandale recently, and these kids were teaching them how to skate. And it is really, really inspiring to see some of these kids, you know, hand down the sport from one generation to the next. So, Kevin, do you want to talk a little bit about the clinics that we've got proposed?
Yeah, I mean, we want to, as we do these, not only help teaching kids safety and skateboarding, but it's a nice way for them to lose that. You know, it's very intimidating when you go to the skate park for the first time. So if we can have these clinics and they can meet some of the older skaters, meet other skaters, it kind of takes that nervousness away, you know, and teaching them stuff, introducing them to other skateboarders, and it just grows from there. You know, and then hopefully we can take some teenage skateboarders and give them a summer job and you know, and not only teach them how to respect the skate park itself, you know, not only how to ride it, but pick up after yourself and the do's and don'ts of being at the skate park.
Absolutely, man. I couldn't agree more. I mean, the skate clinics are vital in our business too. We have cards. We have one gentleman, Adam Miller, teaches skate lessons, and literally every day someone comes in, hey, do you teach lessons? And I just throw his card at him, you know? And it's amazing to see the growth just in our community. And like you said, just like Kev said about the respect of the park, you know, it's, you know, kids, the next generation is learning to respect it more and pick up their trash and to alert people to things that are falling apart to fix and things of that nature. And yeah, Kev nailed it on the penny head with that one, for sure.
Christine, what's the timeline? When can we skate this skate park?
Well, I'll tell you, they are actually out grading as we speak, and it is our plan right now, weather permitting, that we would be able to allow a few days of skating this fall, because we know this has been a long-awaited milestone, and so we're really hopeful that we'll be able to have it open to allow some skating this fall. And then the final construction will be finished next construction season. So we really have two phases here. We've got the actual skatable features that are going to be completed this year. And then phase two is the spectator park, which includes all the amenities and some enhancements that will be around the skate park. One thing that we've not talked about that I think is really unique for our skate park is we have skatable art. We have a donation from an anonymous donor that we will have a piece of skatable art, and it's we actually went out through an RFP process and solicited bids from different artists throughout the country, and the skatable art are the letters W-O-W. Wow.
Cool.
You can actually skate in the O. I can't wait to see how
awesome.
That works, but
right?
They tell me that you can do that. So I think that's another unique feature for the skate park.
All right. Well, Christine Hensley, thank you so much. Brad Anderson and Kevin Jones, some of the people behind the new Lordson Skate Park in Des Moines, which will feature 88,000 square feet of skatable surface, the largest skate park in the United States. And Nate Sherwood, thank you so much.
Well, not a problem. Very honored to be here. Thank you.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.